From KUOW, it's The Record. I'm Marcy Silman. Sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. That's a headline we've seen a lot over the years. This week, the Seattle Archdiocese agreed to pay $12 million for decades-old abuses by Catholic priests. It's one more settlement in the church's long saga of sex abuse scandal. Maybe no other organization is more representative of that history than the Irish Catholic Congregation of Christian Brothers. The Christian Brothers operated the two Seattle schools involved in the recent Archdiocese settlement. They'll provide part of the $12 million. Jason Berry's been following the Christian Brothers for three decades. He's the author of Lead Us Not Into Temptation, the first major book on sex abuse by priests. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Marcy. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. Tell us, who are the Christian Brothers?
The Irish Christian Brothers were a national institution in Dublin and the rest of Ireland for decades, founded in the 1840s by Brother Edmund Rice. A missionary order that specialized in educating young men, particularly those who came from impoverished backgrounds. As the middle class rose in North America, the Christian Brothers had more schools with an audience of constituency of, you know, younger people, especially Irish Americans. The order really fell on hard times, starting in the 1990s when a series of scandals erupted, starting in Canada, later in Ireland, and then the United States and Australia. And they've just been hit by dozens and dozens of these lawsuits for a world of, you know, abuse that has slowly come out and has really rocked the organization to its core.
Jason, what is it about the Christian Brothers that makes them more prone than others to sexual abuse?
I think it was the nature, and I'm about to say this, and let me preface it by saying that one strand of my family dates back to Ireland, so this is not easy to say, but it has gotten a great deal of coverage in Ireland. They took people into the order who never should have become teachers and educators, men who were abused themselves, who had serious sociopathic problems. They sent them out to remote places. There was no internal checks and balances. And, you know, what we're seeing in these lawsuits that are being settled now are men, victims, survivors, you know, in their 40s and 50s, who were abused, you know, decades ago by people who should have been kicked out and instead were recycled and fixed up with great margins of tolerance.
So how did that play out in the way they operated the schools, including the two schools in Seattle where we just settled this dispute?
Right. I believe one of those schools is now closed.
Yes.
Well, you know, as with many of these institutions, you find alumni groups who are quite loyal to the school they attended and have very good memories of teachers they had, administrators, instructors, and so forth. So even if it is a small or comparatively small number of people who were abused, nonetheless, what the legal system looks at is why there was no, you know, fail-safe system put in place so that the pedophiles were weeded out, and that is what they're paying for now. It was part of a church mentality going back really for centuries that was always willing to forgive the father or the brother or the religious servant, whatever his or sometimes her position may be, the idea that everyone is a sinner and therefore you can be forgiven. Well, that doesn't really work when you have someone who is abusing children assignment after assignment.
I'm talking with investigative reporter Jason Berry. And Jason, in the case that was just settled in Seattle, 30 men claimed sexual abuses by teachers in these two schools, and those men are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s now. Why are we just hearing about these cases?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the ones in Seattle have been in litigation for, I think, close to 10 years. And that does happen in some of these lawsuits. It takes a long time through the discovery process to get the evidence. But still, to your question, you know, it is a striking pattern across society, not just involving the Catholic Church, but people who were abused take decades, quite often, to admit to themselves and to others what happened to them. And quite often you find people who are drug addicted or alcoholics or have patterns of dysfunctional behavior, broken marriages. And when they finally come to terms, usually in therapy, doing the heavy lifting to determine, why am I this way? Why has my life not gone the way a good life should? Invariably, it tracks back to the abuse during childhood. And it takes a long time for people to come to terms with that.
The Christian Brothers have been implicated in many of these sex abuse scandals that we've heard about, but the organization is still in operation, right?
Well, it exists, yes. And there are a small number of men in the order. It was a really interesting piece I read from Ireland. One of the Christian Brothers quoted as saying, "We are basically a dying order, and we're trying to hold on to enough assets to cover the elder care of our members." They're not actively recruiting. People are not joining the order. You know, one quick snapshot for you, Marcy. In New York, where they declared Chapter 11, the Christian Brothers chapter in New York went into bankruptcy proceedings some years ago, they closed and sold a high school in Harlem called Rice High School, named after Brother Rice, the founder. Rice High School was a true success story in American education. There's been a wonderful book written about it, in fact. And it had a debt of about $200,000, which is really not a great deal of money. You know, one big fundraiser in Manhattan with stockbrokers and people with hedge funds, you know, could eliminate that. But the order needed to sell the physical plant, and they needed to sell the land in, you know, New York City in order to help fund their ongoing settlements. So these are the kinds of things that the Christian Brothers is now, the order, you might say, is now shadowed by or trailed by. And, you know, it's a rather shameful resolution to a history that, in many ways, in Ireland, was quite glowing until all of this came out.
Finally, Jason, you are Catholic. You've been a member of the church for a long time. You've also followed these sex abuse scandals for a long time. And you've described it as a story that never dies. Why not?
Well, let me first say, in self-defense, I'm also a novelist and a jazz historian. I do have another life. This is not the only thing I do. I think this is a crisis that built up literally over centuries. And it's only been in the last 30 years or so that this clash between a monarchical governing system and the church and two instruments of democracy, the court system and a free press, have you know, created this momentum in the life of the church. It's been devastating in many ways. But I think it's one of those historical patterns that ultimately will have to work itself out. It's not a very savory one. It's sad in many ways, and certainly gripping when we see, you know, the survivors who give testimony and speak. But, you know, this is the oldest church in Christendom, and it's the largest organization in the world. And it goes on.
Jason Berry, contributor to the National Catholic Reporter and author of the book Lead Us Not Into Temptation, Catholic Priests and the Sexual Abuse of Children. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
It's The Record from KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.